Ladies and gentlemen, your featured podcast of the evening.
It's time for United by Wrestling Podcast, baby. I'm your host, Dustin Structure, my co-host.
The Shapester, baby.
And we got a special guest today. It's our first time working with him. We got Kuda from Turbuckle Topics and Top Wrestling Radio, right? I just want to make sure. Top
Wrestling Radio.
All right, that's what I thought. I just want to. All right, Kuda, how's it going, man?
It's good. It's going good. I'm glad the WWE is over across the pond because it just means I get to dodge spoilers on Twitter all day.
That's funny.
I forgot they were over there until I saw the caution spoilers in the tweet, and I was like, oh crap.
Yeah, it's been bad. Good thing I haven't watched it in a little while, so I haven't had to worry about spoilers. But you want to plug any stuff, your channel, any recent podcasts or anything before we get started?
Well, I mean, I had to post my last episode earlier today because since half of our network is at StarCast here in Baltimore, things haven't exactly gotten held up necessarily. It's just not going to come out on the regular schedule like it does. So I posted the audio for that, and I'll do a video podcast every week. The video will be up later than usual. But if you just look at it for it on all the Turnbuckle Topics, Twitter, Facebook, our YouTube channel, all that good stuff, it'll be there. And then next Monday, my show will be on pretty much as usual. I'll just be on 15 minutes earlier. Being on CBS Radio, they move me around if there are live games and things of that nature.
Wait, you're on CBS Radio?
Yes, I'm on CBS 1300 AM out here in Baltimore. Yep.
What? Wow. Nice. That's pretty awesome. Nice. I didn't know that. Wow. How often do you do that?
Well, my wrestling show is every Monday, normally from 6 to 7. This week, I'm on at 5:45 because local basketball moved me. And then on Fridays, I do a show with a buddy of mine that's just regular sports. It's actually his show. He brought me on as a co-host, though.
Wow, that's pretty awesome. So me, Kuda, and Shipester, we're going to be talking about a new kind of thing that we personally haven't done. And that's going to be our favorite storylines and our favorite characters in pro wrestling history. And the effects some of those characters had on wrestling and outside of wrestling, because as we all know, there's been some great characters out there, like The Undertaker, and there's been some non-great ones, like Gilbert.
Or Kazarni.
Kazarni. And each one has its place in wrestling, and each place should never be talked about again, to be honest. But so, all right, Kuda, I'm going to have you start. What is your favorite storyline in pro wrestling history?
I mean, I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up The Rock versus Austin before WrestleMania X7. That's probably number one. Because they did everything they could to make it more complicated than it was, and it wasn't. It was just two guys who didn't like each other that happened to get booked against each other. That was really it. There wasn't that much in and out to it, but they made it seem like there was. So I think its lack of complexity is what made it so good. It was just two guys who didn't like each other, and there was a title on the line. That was really it. And I think it was just a combination of that, and in my opinion, still the greatest WrestleMania video package ever to my way. Just the combination of all that, it all just kind of clicked, and then they delivered on the match a 12 out of 10 with one of the craziest heel turns ever. What's nuts about it is the heel turn was so out of nowhere and so well executed, it took us all a day to realize it. The next day on Raw, we go, oh, that's right, he did ally himself. We didn't even realize. We were just, it all went so well for them that it took us an extra day. So that's probably number one for me.
And what do you think, how do you think that laid some landscape? What kind of impact do you think it kind of started for the business going forward, to now current day? Do you think it changed the game on anything at all?
I mean, it's tough to say because this is one of the quickest changing industries, period, especially now. I think it's as far as top-level talent versus absolute top-level talent, which is what that was, I think it did lay some groundwork for it because they were both in the prime of their career, and at that time there really wasn't an end in sight for either of them. So when you're in that situation, you have to do a really good job of opening the story, telling it, and ending it, but also leaving something open that might not be it either. And I think they did that very well. So you see that nowadays in some aspect. It's just, it takes 1 month instead of three, unfortunately. So I do think you see that to some degree nowadays.
Absolutely. Shapes, do you have any comments about the Austin Rock WrestleMania 17 storyline? Because that was truly one of the greatest of all time.
That was one of, still to the, like, I agree with Kuda, still to this day, probably the one of the best, if not the best, video packages of all time. And then, like, the good point on how it was executed, because at that time, we were so fortunate to have two guys that were that good at the same time, because ever since then, we haven't had those, that level. You've had, you had John Cena, and then you didn't have really anybody on that level, and then you have these two build up a match, like, essentially, really, Kuda made a good point on, pretty much out of nothing, it was just, the two top guys, and then the way that it ended, when they brought up the match for, was it 19, it just felt right, because it was like, it had that ending point, but it didn't have that ending point, if that makes sense. It was just like, you could just go into the 19 match, and it was like, yeah, these two can go again, because there was this kind of, ending before, when I think it was that following night on Raw when Austin did the beatdown on Rock, and the Rock left for a while and came back, and it was never mentioned. There was your opening right there. And to go from that to nowadays, when you have that amongst two top tier talents, but it has to be that top level, that you do see the blueprints of what that feud and what that match in particular created for today's era of wrestling.
Yeah, no, I agree. So, we're talking about the WrestleMania 17 video package. Once again, I agree, probably the best of all time. And there was a line that Austin mentioned at the end. He's, because there's a whole Deborah angle and whatever and that. And he's like, this is about Deborah. This is about you, even me disliking Rock. This is about the WWE Championship, and you have it, and I want it. I'll beat your ass at WrestleMania. So it was literally just built off the title. Like, not really any huge storylines, not anything. And that's a whole other topic of, how much the championship meant back then, which it felt important. So that's a whole conversation for a different thing.
But it's also, like, in that line that he mentioned, it's like, this isn't about her. This is about, what you have that I want. And he, like, foreshadowed the turn, because he's like, I will do whatever I have to do to get it, whatever that is. And it was that great, foreshadowing to what eventually happened. But I think when Kuda mentioned the heel turn, in, I think it helped being in Texas too, because the crowd was so pro Austin that, nobody gave a shit that he was aligning himself with Vince. Everybody was just happy that, including everybody watching, it was just like, oh, he won the title. Yeah. And then it's like, wait a minute. Oh, that's what happened. Okay.
Yeah. So that's like the thing. You have the two top guys. Like, has there ever been a more power, like, stars, like, at the same time as Rock and Austin? Like, you've had your top guys and the companies, but has there been two guys at top star level ever, like those two guys? Like, Kuda, do you remember? Like, there was Hogan and, like, Macho and Ultimate Warrior, and then you had John and, like, Randy, but has there anyone been in two guys with the star power that they both had at the same time?
Well, yeah, anybody the combination of the two top guys in the company who are also that white hot at the same time, I don't know if, I mean, at least in my lifetime, I really don't know if I can find it. I don't. I've seen it where one guy in the match is like that. I mean, where it's been just insurmountably clear. The last time it was insurmountably clear where one part of the match was WrestleMania 30 with Daniel Bryan and Batista and Randy Orton. It's because Daniel Bryan, it was absolutely undeniable. I remember watching, thinking, not only do I want Daniel Bryan to win, but if he doesn't, they're absolutely insane. Like, there was no other way that could go. And they booked it very well, and it worked very well. And even though, realistically, I think as cool as the ending was and as satisfying as it was, the match itself was a little, it really wasn't everything it was meant to be, but the result somehow made up for that. you know, the image of him yesing with two belts on the announce table is that kind of brought it all home. But other than that, as far as two top guys that are that hot at the same time, no, I can't, at least not in my lifetime. I can't. You may have had a point with Hogan and Warrior. Maybe that might have been it. But other than that, maybe you could make the argument for Michaels and Austin at 15.
Mm.
Maybe.
14, but other 14. Than
that, I don't really. Oh yeah, 14. Other than that, I don't really know.
Yeah, I mean, the only match, like, it wasn't like Austin. I mean, not Austin. Sorry, Rock versus Hogan. That program they had, those guys were both white hot, but that wasn't like long standing by any means.
Right, right. That was just the build up when Hogan came back, and you know everybody was going off the nostalgia of, you know, Hollywood Hulk Hogan. It wasn't like they weren't on the run together, and I don't think there has been, at least like Kuda said, not in our lifetimes, that we've ever seen, that we've ever had the opportunity to see two guys that good together at the top at the same time.
Yeah, anybody listening, feel free to drop a comment, because, you know, I'm a 90s baby. I wasn't around too much for the 80s, to be honest. Well, not around at all.
You weren't around at all.
So if you guys, you know, that watch from that era and before, if you want to feel free to leave a message, you know, comment, you know, correcting us, please do. So what do you guys think about the Austin, you know, Rock character and concepts? Did you guys like that? Like, how do you think about the development? Do you think that they were supposed to be successful characters, or was it more the guys performing it?
Well, it was, to me, it was what we strive for nowadays, which is, in the ring, effectively, you're a guy in tights. But outside of the ring, you're this character that no one can quite comprehend. That's why I think Adam Cole is so over right now. He's this incredible character that none of us can really fully comprehend. We just think he's the coolest dude that's ever lived. But when he's in the ring, he's technically a guy in tights. I mean, that is no disrespect, but that's really what he is. There's no, his gimmick doesn't come through in his ring gear or anything. It's strictly in these little things that he does. And Rock and Austin were that. I mean, Austin was the simplest character.
Yeah. He's
an angry dude from Texas. That was really what he was. And it fit as perfectly as it could. And The Rock was this Samoan cat that had everything nailed down about as good as he could. And I think that was, that's what I find so incredible, is so many of these matches are of characters that really weren't cranked up to 11. I mean, to bring up what you mentioned earlier, even Hogan and Warrior. I mean, yeah, Warrior had the armbands and he ran out and he did the whole thing. But if you really look at him and Hogan, they were just kind of, they weren't really cranked up to 11 characters. I mean, the only one you saw in spots like that was The Undertaker, as far as cranked up to 11 characters. So, I mean, they were both awesome characters, but the thing is, you had to wait for them to speak or wait for them to wrestle. If you just looked at them, other than being really physically impressive, just because they're two giant dudes that look like they could rip you in half, other than that, it was just, you got to wait for them to do something. Like, all right, jean shorts, Austin 316 shirt, but what are you going to do? Like, you had to wait for them to do something. You didn't get that natural, I guess I shouldn't say natural, because it was actually pretty natural how they had that aura about them. But I mean, even when it was just Austin walking through backstage, not saying a word, you go, well, something big's coming with this guy. They didn't have to do much, but they weren't, you know, like I said, they weren't eccentric characters at a glance. I'll put it that way.
Yeah. What do you think, Alan, about the characters? Is it the character or the guys that play the character that make it more successful?
Well, I think, you know, in Kuda's point, it's like, if you look at them at a glance, you know, you see two physically impressive guys, and one's decked out in Dolce & Gabbana shirts and shoes and crap, and the other's decked out in blue-collar jean shorts and Austin 316 shirt, and it's like, okay, you know, if you go to certain parts of town, you're going to see both of these guys. You know, you're going to see this dude at the bar on a Friday night after work, and you're going to see this guy driving his Porsche down Main Street. But when they grabbed a microphone and they started initializing the character and the persona, and of course that has a lot to do with both of them being that persona, you know, pretty much personally as a person, you know, Austin's a blue collar guy from Texas and The Rock is, you know, a crap talking dude from the University of Miami. And it's like once they started, you know, initializing that character and you got engrossed in it, then it's like, okay, when you see them, you know that you're going to be entertained regardless of what they do or say, because you know how good it is and how good it flows. I mean, hell, Austin probably created two of the biggest catchphrases in, you know, wrestling history, and hell, one of them still be enchanted today in 2019. And trust me, I'm on the, you know, might be an unpopular opinion, but I think that chant should really die now. But you know,
oh no, it's not unpopular. No.
Okay. Well,
very popular opinion from
okay,
people.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm in the boat of I really think the what chant should die now, but I mean, still, it just goes to show the longevity of the persona and the character, because hell, when you're still getting a chant done and you're not even there on a weekly basis, you're there maybe what, once every couple years or once every year, and people are still chanting your one of your catchphrases or wearing your shirts, it's the character and the persona driven behind it that I think made it what it was.
So here's a question I'm gonna throw back at you two guys. I honestly think, you know, the characters, you know, Austin's especially was the attitude people were feeling in that time. It's like, I would love to go to work and, you know, flip my boss off and all that. But, you know, I think it's Steve himself that made the gimmick, because here's the question I ask. Would that gimmick have worked if someone like Bob Holly played that same gimmick?
No, not Cuda. Even in the slightest.
Cuda, what do you think?
No, I don't think so. I mean, as much as we all like to criticize Vince sometimes, he has a pretty good idea of what kind of character fits for what person, and that's why Steve got Steve Austin and Bob Holly got Sparky. That's correct.
Speaking of a little side note on Austin, though, because Cuda just triggered my thought on this, with, you know, Vince letting Steve have Stone Cold Steve Austin, when he first came into the WWE, I'm sure y'all remember the Ringmaster. Mm-hmm. If you ever watched Austin's documentary about when, you know, I think it was the Bottom Line, I can't remember what year it came out, but when he was... when he went to Vince and Briscoe at the time, and he said, you know, look, I hate this gimmick. This is stupid. And he was watching a documentary on HBO one night about this hitman for hire for the Chicago mob. And he got this, like, inspiration for, like, a cold character. Do you guys remember the names that they gave, that Creative gave him for that? Could you imagine Austin being called? Do you remember any of those names?
I remember two of them that he pointed out on the documentary. One was Otto von Ruthless.
Yep.
And the other one was Ice Dagger.
And the third one was Fang McFrost.
Yes, exactly.
Could you imagine, like, Stone Cold Steve Austin being called any of those? Oh, and it's like, you know, when he presented Vince with the idea of, like, look, I want to be called Stone Cold Steve Austin, and Vince, with, you know, like Cuda said, we criticize the crap out of Vince. It's not a unknown thing at this point, but he has that eye, and if he didn't have that eye for that character persona that Austin was presenting, you know, we wouldn't have had that. So a lot of that credit goes to him for that.
Yeah, I agree. And then it's like, you know, the gimmicks are cool, but some guys are just, they're both of them were so good. Like, look at how Dwayne's elevated himself from the Rock character. Like, do you think his, like, work, I mean, do you guys think his work in WWE has a lot to do with that? Or is it just Dwayne himself? Well, like, I kind of think that WWE helped give him a platform to push to where he is today. What is he, the top ranked?
He was 2018, and as far as I know, so far in 2019, the highest grossing actor in Hollywood.
Like, I guess my question is, do you think if he didn't channel Rock and kept it being Rocky Maivia, he would have gotten to where he is in Hollywood and stuff?
Oh no. Oh no.
Cuda.
Yeah, the good old Samoan trunks and a shoulder breaker as a finisher. No. I mean, look, I respect his path to get there, absolutely, but But no, I don't think so. I mean, he is one of the more natural entertainers I've ever seen. Like, for example, recently, and I know you guys are aware of this, he put the belt on the winner of a UFC fight.
That was awesome.
And then he walked it out to his entrance music, and he got a bigger pop than any fighter that walked to the octagon. Yeah. So the guy in scripted entertainment got a bigger pop than the guys who actually hit each other in the face. I mean, if that tells you anything, then he really is one of those entertainment type guys. And he changed his phrase to the most electrifying man in all of entertainment. And I mean, who knew it wasn't a catchphrase? He's just telling us a fact at this point.
It's kind of funny you mention pro wrestling MMA. It's like a lot of guys that come out to their walkout musics and, you know, people are like, whatever. But Colby Covington, I don't know if you know who he is. Came out to Kurt Angle's theme song, and everybody was going, you know, they were blowing the roof off of the "you suck" chants. It's just like, pro wrestling has a place in the world. I don't care what anybody says. It's like, The Rock, you know, Masvidal and Diaz got pretty good ovations, but like Kuda said, Dwayne's was bigger.
Yeah. So like, I mean, it's like, and then, you know, back to the point, it's like, you know, if he'd have kept doing the whole good God awful haircut, shoulder breaker finish character, which you could tell the whole time the whole thing was fabricated. It wasn't him. And like Ron Simmons said, it's like, you know, he sucked ass when he first got there, and that's because he was doing something that he didn't like doing, that he wasn't comfortable doing. And when you do something like that, you're gonna suck at it. And
I think go ahead.
And then it's like, you know, when he was able to break away from that and show people, it's like, okay, you know, I can do this, and I can get you guys in the palm of my hand and do and say whatever, and you're gonna like it. And then going from that to the WWE helping him exponentially, I think, get to that platform of like, okay, this guy is this entertaining here. Let's get him in a movie or two and see how good he does with that. And well, we know the rest is history on that one.
That's the thing, you know, like when Kuda brought up, you know, how he enjoys talking about storylines and characters, like, I want to talk about this because that's a missing art in professional wrestling today, I think.
Yeah,
you know, I think more people are built on, you know, wrestling, which is important, you know, and flips and the dives and all that, but, you know, look at these guys and starting, they've had an inside and outside of the ring with good character development, good storylines, like, it's something that's really a shame that's missing.
Because it's like, I mean, now while you look at it on the, you know, at the on the surface of, if you're looking at the strictly wrestling part, okay, Austin and Rock, guys like that, they were good wrestlers. Don't get me wrong; I'm not saying they weren't good because they were really good wrestlers, but they weren't the best wrestlers. It was the mixture of the wrestling, the characters, and the storytelling that they could engross you in that. Combine it all together, that was what the enjoyable part of it was.
Do you think, Kuda, we need to see more storytelling in wrestling, more characters nowadays? Yeah,
I absolutely think that I agree with you. I couldn't have said it better than you did. It is a missing part of it, but it's kind of like what horror movies are nowadays. It's horror movies used to be this psychological, I guess, maze you had to work your way through. And it would horrify you what you were thinking about. Right. Now, it's not. It's just how many things can we make pop in front of you and make you scream for a second.
Yeah.
And if you look at wrestling, that's how it is. It used to be these three-month treks of two guys or two girls or whatever the case might have been trying to destroy each other, and it will culminate 3 months from now. And now it's just, hey, remember that spot he pulled in their match 2 weeks ago? And that's really it. For example, I'm a huge fan of The Fiend, and I think he is sort of bringing it back because it's not just a pop-up for him. Even though they involve it, he is, the duality of his character is very much that storytelling that's coming back. Guys like a Daniel Bryan are still want to be very heavily involved in that. That's why I'm glad it looks like they're going to be working with each other.
Yeah.
I agree. I think there needs to be more of it, and that's why I love guys like an Adam Cole. That's why I love guys like a Jay Lethal in Ring of Honor. That's why I love guys like right now, like a Cody Rhodes,
mm-hmm.
who and a Kenny Omega, a John Moxley. There are a lot of guys who want to bring it back, but I think that the majority of the audience is always going to be quote unquote casual fans, not fans like us who watch it and try to apply an art and a science to it. And because of that, that's why you just might not see it as much, because after a week, they might be tired of it and you got to move on. And guys like us are going to go, and I think that's, it has changed our opinion. Because how often do you watch wrestling now when you go, man, this is really cool. It's a shame this is probably it, because they know the regular fans won't want to see it two shows in a row. And it's kinda, I'm glad they did it, but why can't they keep this going for a while?
So, I'm glad you mentioned Cody, because I'm very pro AEW. I don't hate WWE, but like his job he did with that promo and really selling the story of him versus Jericho for Full Gear, that's some of the best storytelling I've seen in a long time in wrestling.
Oh yeah,
honestly, and I'm not like, trying to snag an AEW mark here, but like that. I mean, Dwayne even said how good of a promo that Cody Rhodes one was from Dynamite.
I'm saying when you have arguably one of the, you know, if not one of the best, if not the best promo cutter of all time, sending you a tweet saying, "Bro, that was damn good," and then it's like the only thing about that promo is like I wish he would have done that promo like 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago.
Because, to start it off.
But see, that's the thing, though, to bring up, that's a really good point, though, to bring up, it's like, that's what it feels like AEW is doing, though. They're really pushing the feuds of big-time matches like that. They're really getting that story element amongst the, you know, the great matches that they put on. They're getting that, what we've called a lost art of wrestling. They're really bringing that, it feels like they're really bringing that back into the limelight a little bit.
So we're talking storylines. What do you guys think? Cody, what do you think about this current Jericho-Cody storyline? Are you into it? Are you not feeling it?
Yeah, no, I mean, I've certainly gotten into it as it's gone on because of the job that Cody's been doing. I think it's, because quite honestly, I'll be honest, it's my opinion of this. As good as he's done, the thing he needed to do for me was to pull away the facade that he's the boss. And that's what he needed to do. Because what was always in the back of my head is, because there's a small part of me that even wants the Elite to use the fact that they effectively run the place as an angle. Like, it would be the greatest heel idea ever. Just, they all get title shots and most of them win and they go, well, why wouldn't we? We're in charge. And I feel like you could use that as an angle. But at the same time, it's clear they don't want to do that. So Cody says, if I lose, I'll never challenge for the world title again. So, you know, tomorrow night when I'm at Royal Farms Arena in downtown Baltimore, I'm going to be curious how that's one's going to turn out. So, yeah, they've definitely drawn me in. But, I mean, you talk about two guys at the right place at the right time. I mean, this is not Austin Rock level stuff, nowhere close.
No.
But two guys at the right level. Right. I mean, Cody's never been better. Jericho, as far as hardcore wrestlings are concerned, man, that guy can sell dirt to a ditch digger. It's amazing.
Yeah.
He can sell any program with anybody at any time. I mean, I can't. So he's done very well with it. I'm curious about it, but I feel like there's a lot of foreshadowing saying, hey, if it goes the full 60, we'll go to judges. Feel like that wouldn't have been announced unless it was a pretty heavy foreshadowing. So they drew me in. I will say at first I was skeptical, but they've certainly drawn me in.
So I'm setting up question on top of this. So you just mentioned Jericho and like how he can sell dirt. You know, what do you think of the evolution of Jericho's character for all these years? Like, what are your thoughts about all Jericho's characters he's had in his pro wrestling career? And like, how does he do with them? Like,
I mean, he's done pretty well with all of them. He's always found little ways to change things up with himself. I mean, I remember going back to him as Lionheart in ECW all the way up until he was doing the List of Jericho. So, I mean, he's had a million different looks, and he's made them all look good. And I think right now he's sort of this half Hollywood veteran who knows better, but just the most arrogant SOB you could ever imagine. I mean, in the video package he did on Dynamite, I couldn't help but laugh that this guy actually said, it's really hard for me to deal with waking up in the morning and looking in the mirror and realizing how great I am. and what's funny is you believe it. Like, you're like, yeah, it kind of is.
So funny.
Like, it's so I don't he can sell anything in the world of wrestling, maybe outside of it. I mean, you know, me living around here, I watched my local news this morning, and he was on there promoting the show.
Really? That's cool.
So he even looked good there. So he can do it all anywhere. So as far as his characters, yeah, he's been great. But I think my personal favorite version of it was probably the early 2000s, which is what I refer to as the "Would you please shut the hell up, Jericho?" That was probably number one. Because
yeah.
He had all these feuds with all these great upper mid-carders, and he just made them work like a charm. I mean, you talk about a meteoric rise. I mean, he opened WrestleMania X7 for the Intercontinental title, and then the next year he main evented it. So he's proven you can put him anywhere.
Yeah, so me and Shapester have openly admitted we think Jericho's the GOAT of professional wrestling, as in complete package. Like, he's a good wrestler. Very good wrestling. He's very good on the mic. You know, I think he's literally sold every single thing he's done excellently. Shay, what's your favorite variation of Chris Jericho, like gimmick-wise, character-wise?
It would have to be either the "Would you please shut the hell up, Jericho," or it would have to be the "You're gonna get it, Jericho," because what I loved about that was he took one of the most average words in the American lexicon, and he got it over. He got the word "it" over. Like, you think of any word in the English language, take any one of them, and he picks "it," a word that is probably used more times than you can even count to. And he got it over because everybody, when he started doing it, everybody's like, "Okay, what's this?" And then, like, 2 weeks later, everybody's like, he's like, "You're going to get." And then you hear the entire arena going, "It, it." Like, we've always known how good Jericho is, but it's like, when you see things like that, he can get a clipboard and a piece of paper over. I mean, hell, they even started selling the things on shop for a while. And then you can get an average word like "it" over. I mean, it just goes to show that the guy never. I don't think there's ever been a point in Jericho's career when anybody's ever said, "Oh, this guy's stale. He needs to go away for a while." No, because he always finds a way to reinvent and reinvigorate your interest in him, and especially now with what he's done in New Japan, what he's done in AEW. It's like the guy still going after all these years can do anything and will try anything to see what it can do. And then you take like a word like that and it's just like, dude, you are the man. I will bow in your presence, because when you wake up in the morning, yes, you are that damn great.
See, my favorite variation of Jericho is "Would you please shut the hell up?" But also, I don't know why, I really liked him when he came out wearing suits and calling people hypocritical leeches and tapeworms and all that.
What was it? The 2000, I think, 2010 Jericho.
Where he had that match with Shawn in that ladder match.
Yeah, yeah. The 2010 when he was rocking the suits and the short haircut and all of that, yeah.
See, I honestly think, in Jericho's case, that it's definitely the guy that gets it over, not the character. Because how many people can get bubbly over?
And literally, like, you know, that was one of those things when he's walking backstage and he sees the bubbly sitting on the table, and you know, in his, like, after seeing Jericho work for all these years and knowing how he works and he's going to try anything once, you know, he looked at that on the table and thought, "Oh, I'm going to say it like this and, you know, let's see what happens." And then, well, it crashed Pro Wrestling Tees for like almost an hour and a half because people were buying the shirts just because it caught fire so fast. And it's like, "Oh, you know, let's try this and see what happens."
So Kuda shared his favorite storyline, so I'm going to share mine now, only because Kuda kind of foreshadowed it in his answer of, you know, stars. One of my favorite is the Yes Movement storyline. What did you guys think about that whole thing before I kind of get into why it's one of my favorites? What did you think about Kuda? Since you were the one mentioned earlier, I figured I'd let you start off.
Well, it was interesting because they did a very good job at showing that it truly was him against the world. Because he had to go into a triple threat match in the main event, and then he had to face Triple H earlier that night. And Triple H did his sort of modern PG version of what he did to Shawn Michaels in 02 at SummerSlam, where I don't care if I walk out or if I have to get rolled out, you're not making it. And it was a smart call on everybody's part, and Daniel sold it to perfection. Another great video package with that Imagine Dragon song Monster on it. Another very well done idea. It was fun to watch. It certainly got me amped up for the event. I will admit, see, if you ask me now, that is the highlight, was him winning the whole thing. If you asked me then, I was looking forward to Brock and Undertaker. Oh. But I will say, with hindsight, it was the number one. And yeah, I think it was the Yes Movement was a very cool idea, because it wasn't just him against one guy. It wasn't. I mean, there were times where Randy Orton as the champion really wasn't even a central part of it. It was just him against the establishment, whoever the establishment decided to be. And I think that that certainly helped it. It got him over absolutely huge. And that's why I think he's in the spot that he's in now. Because, again, like Austin and Rock, he's effectively a guy in tights that's the total package, like you described Jericho. That's what Daniel Bryan is. And he was facing Randy Orton, another guy kind of like that. And Batista, another guy kind of like that. Triple H, another guy kind of like that. So that's why I think you see, for lack of better term, these full-on characters, again, with the exception of Undertaker, they really don't get that spot. And I think that's why you need to have that total package feel. And, I mean, Daniel Bryan proved it to me then, and he keeps proving it to me every week afterwards.
What about you, Shape? What do you think about that whole Yes Movement storyline? I'm thinking from that, at least from what I'm doing, I'm thinking SummerSlam 2013, where he beat John, got pinned, ran cash in until WrestleMania 30. Yeah. What did you think about that whole little run?
I still think to this day, as far as WWE goes, it's the best WWE storyline ever since. There hasn't been a storyline as good as it since. And this was, 5 years ago? So, yeah. And I think to play a lot what Kuda said, it was so well executed by everybody involved. And then when you had guys as good as Triple H, Batista, Orton in it, and they all felt like just literal parts of it, it was all about Bryan. And it was the concept of, okay, this guy, the world's out against him, and he's not going to quit. He's not going to stop until he gets what he feels he deserves. And for him to play it from literally from SummerSlam of 2013 all the way until April of 2014, for them to play it that long, and it got better every week. I think one of my highlights of that storyline was the occupation of Raw. When they did, when they brought in all the doubles and stuff and occupied the ring and whatnot, it was like, look, I'm this guy, I feel I've earned this, and you're going to give this to me because I've done all of this, and you're not going to hold me back. I don't care if you're a McMahon or if you're, Triple H or whoever it is, I'm going to get what I've worked for because I've earned it, and nobody's going to keep me down. The whole concept of the angle, one versus all versus the world, was such a great story, and then it had all the right people playing it to go along with it.
The crazy thing about that storyline is it wasn't even supposed to happen.
Yeah.
Punk's walkout kind of is what sparked that. So if you want to think CM Punk for one thing, at least you can thank him for the Yes Movement. Say, because it was supposed to be Bryan versus Sheamus at WrestleMania 30, which is crazy to think about.
Yeah,
but the Yes Movement took over,
and it was supposed to be Punk in that. Like, that was supposed to be all Punk, and then it's like, to think that we would have gotten Bryan versus Sheamus. I mean, no, I mean, like I said, I hate that Punk left, but damn, I'm glad it. It happened the way it did, because that would have been a horrible waste for Bryan for what we know now. Like, if we, like Kuda said, if you'd asked me then, like, talk about it then, it's like, but now it's like, holy crap, I'm glad that worked like it did.
So I think my thing is first off, I followed like Bryan, and Ring of Honor and all that stuff. So it's like, I was so happy to see him get that, because we all know how good he was. But I honestly, like, I don't think WWE was sold on him. I think that's why it felt so real. Because he definitely wasn't a WWE top guy going in. So it's like, you're starting to think, are they actually trying to hold Bryan back? Like, do they not want this guy in the main event? You know, was that, you know, Vince's call to have Randy come in and cash in on Bryan right there? You know, he got the win to shut the fans up, but we don't want the title on him, so boom, Randy cash in.
Right.
It's like, Bryan kind of stands up for the common man, you know, me, Kuda, you know, Aunt Susie, little Johnny, like all that. So I think that's why he got so over was, you know, once again, I think Bryan Danielson, the guy, is what made it go over, not, you know, Daniel Bryan, right. The character. Because right. Bryan is such a likable guy. He literally, look at him.
Yeah.
You know, take out Daniel Bryan. You look down the street, saw him in his long hair and beard. Would you think that guy's like a professional wrestler?
No.
Let alone main event WrestleMania?
Right.
Kuda, what about you?
No. Oh, no, no. I wouldn't think that, though. I do want to throw this in real quick, though. I'm glad we didn't get DB versus Sheamus in that situation. However, DB and Sheamus did have a fantastic 18-second WrestleMania match once.
Oh, yeah. So, oh, yeah, they did. It was great.
You need to bring that up. Where Sheamus went through a whole Royal Rumble and won the damn thing to beat him in 18 seconds. so it's, yeah, the positive thing, the positive version of what happened with Baron Corbin and his Money in the Bank briefcase.
Well, I think it's like also, you know, what another thing I think that added to the Yes Movement storyline was, in fact, that match. It was like, you know, you knew for those of us who knew how good Bryan was all along, and then he gets that match and then gets crapped on in 18 seconds, and then for all of this to culminate with that storyline, it's like, okay, yeah, I really, you know, like Dustin said, it's a really good point of, okay, as it went on, they really don't want this guy. This guy is not top guy material. There's no way, and they're going to do everything in their power to keep him from that.
Yeah. And then that's the thing, is that connection built, and then all of a sudden, you know, from then to, you know, when he joined the Wyatt family and that awkward feud, you know, people were chanting Daniel Bryan during matches that he wasn't even in because the people wanted their voice to be heard because Bryan represents the people.
Oh, the best example of that was at the Rumble leading up to WrestleMania 30. Is he got eliminated early, and the crowd did not care about anyone else in that Rumble. Nobody. If it wasn't Daniel Bryan, they weren't happy. I mean, when number 30 showed up and it turned out to be a returning Rey Mysterio, they booed Rey because they wanted, for some reason, they wanted Daniel to be the first guy since Mick Foley to get more than one spot in a Rumble. And, I mean, it wasn't going to happen. But, I mean, because I'm watching the Rumble going, man, Pittsburgh is just not having it. They just weren't. Well, it was DB or nothing.
And then it's like, you know, I think when with early on, like, because that was Punk's last WWE interaction as well. And then after the crap fest that he had, and then it's like Bryan has a crap. It's like, okay, you know what? We want Daniel Bryan. We're going to get Daniel. It's like, oh, we get Rey Mysterio. No, you know what? Screw Rey. We don't like him. You know, it's like, screw this guy. Oh, who's... I mean, you could have brought out anybody, and I'm sure they would have booed them just because they wanted Bryan so bad.
That's when the heel turn against Batista happened, because the part-timer won that.
Yeah.
Not a big Dave Batista fan, but I don't know. I felt bad for Batista in that whole storyline, to be honest with you.
I mean, yeah, you know, Batista coming back and me also being a bit, I was like, oh, this is great. But then it's like the way that he was booked is like, oh, no, let's not do that.
So the culmination, I think, was even sweeter for us because you mentioned, you know, the crowd going crazy when he won the match. We were there live for it. And boy, the atmosphere, if Bryan didn't win there, that match, especially after his streak was broken, there was going to be a riot.
Yeah, that place was literally the definition of, you go from that, which was, I've never ever heard 70 plus thousand people go quiet that fast, to they completely shit on the women's match, which I felt sorry for every one of those women for that in that match, because they had to follow up the streak being broken, and then during the main event, it was literally Bryan or bust, and I was like, dude, yo, maybe we should, like, if Bryan doesn't win this, we need to leave, like, right now. Like, right now, if Batista or Orton gets the three, you know, we need to go, because, like, this place is going to go apeshit if we don't.
It was hostile. So that's kind of like the Big Fan Brian storyline. And so now, when, you know, this is how we're transitioning. We're talking about streaks, and now we're going to talk about Brock Lesnar. It's always a transition. What do you guys feel about Brock and his aura, his whole character? I know Shipe and me have some, like, opinions about him as a guy, so let's just talk about his character. Like, are you sold on the whole Brock Lesnar aura, Kuda, as a wrestler, as a character?
As a character, absolutely. I think it fits in perfectly. He's this giant guy that's going to do what he wants, but he still feels the need to bring his litigation team with him. think about that for a second. Like, you have the look of someone that no one would ever screw with. But why is there a guy here for paperwork? It doesn't, it proves that, like, I'll do whatever I need to, but if there's money involved, I need legal representation. And I think it helps. It was a while ago when he was just sitting backstage reading a magazine. That was one of his greatest looks recently. Because I don't really know how much of an act it is. I think he's just kind of, whatever they want to do, I don't care.
Lesnar just comes off as a dick, and that's him.
Yeah, I checked for this Raw cleared. Well, they can do whatever they want. That's fine. And I think it helps. It fits. I think it was a very smart call how they moved the titles onto two separate shows very recently. Because, you know, The Fiend wins at Crown Jewel, and everyone's going, well, now you got both heavyweight titles on the same show. How are you going to do it? And everyone's first thought was, are they going to find a way to take it off Bray in that short a period of time? Well, thanks to some, flights that didn't happen or whatever the hell went down, that wasn't possible. But it made sense for Brock Lesnar to go, you know what? I quit. I'm out. It made perfect sense. Everyone's sort of going, yeah, I can see him doing that. So now I'm leaving, I'm taking the title with me, and what are you going to do to stop me? I'm looking for a guy in a mask. And and it works. So I think it fits. I like his aura right now. I think also he is not as much of a part-timer as we thought. I think it's because his UFC deal kind of fell through on him. But he's not as much of a part-timer, and if he's going to be around, he's going to be around. But if the stipulation is I'll only be there regularly if I'm the champ, believe it or not, I do not have an issue with that. It just means if he shows up, he's probably going to win the title. Okay. And it's not that he's done bad things with it. He's by no means a disappointment. He does everything he need to, and he has shown if he respects you and he likes the angle, he will work. I mean, dude, he made Ray look $1 million on Raw. So he'll work with you if he wants to. And I think a lot of hardcore fans accept that now, that he'll work with you.
His match of Rollins at SummerSlam was really good. Like, yeah. He was selling. Like,
oh, he'll work with Seth. He'll prove he'll work with Ray. He'll prove he'll work with Roman. Apparently he didn't like Dean Ambrose too much because that match was just terrible. I mean,
Brock's apparently really old school.
Yeah.
Wrestling tradition-wise. Like, he's one of those old school wrestlers. I'm going to call it in the ring, and if you don't have a plan, I'm going to stiff you. Apparently Dean didn't have a plan going in that match from what Lesnar was quoted.
Which is like, how can you not look at a guy or how can you not talk to a guy like Moxley and go, okay, this guy has no plan. This guy, how can you not be like prepared for that going
in? Brock's the same way. He shows up a day before the match.
It's like, dude, I understand having, you know, some core elements that you want to incorporate into a match, especially in a match like at WrestleMania. But, I mean, look, dude, Moxley is about as on the spot type dude that you can find. And Moxley's not going to have a set plan. He's not going to sit there and, you know, like, choreograph every damn thing that he wants to do. That's just who he is. It's like, dude, how can you stiff the guy for just what? You know, that part didn't make a lot of sense, but
that's the thing. That's Lesnar's a guy, like we're talking about. He just does what he wants.
Yeah.
I think Brock Lesnar himself is kind of a dick, it seems like.
Yeah. And it's like, and I think also, though, you know, as much as crap as me and you talk about him, and, you know, I'll give him at face value what he gives. You know, he's that guy. He really, I honestly, truly, I don't think he gives a shit. I really don't. And he admits it. And see, I'm big on that. You know, it's like, okay, if you're an asshole, tell everybody that you're an asshole going in. Don't try to sugarcoat it. Don't try to play it like Brock. Brock's like, dude, I'm probably the biggest asshole you're ever going to meet. You know what? I like that. You know, I'll give you props for that because, you know, I'm not going to sit there and go, wow, dude, this guy's a dick. Oh, no, he's not. That's because he, well, yeah, he is because he said he is. And I like that. And as much crap as we talk about him, I'll give him what he, you know, he, with his new schedule, and like Kudus, I think it's because his UFC cry back went, fell through. But, you know, from the work that he's done, like the Brock party stuff was probably some of my favorite stuff in a long time. And then sitting backstage, what was it, Raw? I think it was Raw, reading the magazine, like Kudus said, when he was sitting back, it's like, dude, you know, he has that look about him, like he's flipping through, I think, a hunting magazine or something. And he has that look about him, like, you know, I'm here. Look, everybody, I'm here. Oh, Paul, can you tell me when the check clears and hits my bank account so I can get the hell out of here? Because I've done fulfilled my duties for the night. I came and I beat the crap out of whoever, and I gave some suplexes, said suplex city, bitch, and got the hell out. You know, just tell me when the check clears so I can get the jet and leave. And I like that because it's like that's a lot, I think, him. And his aura is like, dude, you're not going to mess with the guy. If you saw the dude on the street and he, like, slapped your girlfriend's ass, you're not going to be like, dude, would you? Oh, crap, it's Brock Lesnar. you know what, dude? You can have that. Yep, see ya. You know, and I like that about him. So I'll give him, I don't like too much of Lesnar as the guy, but when it portrays so well in what he does, you know, I'll give him his props where his props are due.
And that's the thing is, with Brock, like it or not, that aura is, I think, what makes him, like, you can argue he's the second biggest megastar outside of WWE besides Dwayne.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Sure.
I mean,
he's crossed, like, his UFC run, you know, his, you know, I came in, I won the UFC world title, you know, he brought in that fan base, and on top of the WWE one, it's like, everyone's like, that's Brock Lesnar, that guy's a big dude, you know, he makes utter heavyweights, like, Mark, you know, he makes, like, Cain Velasquez looks small, even. The guy that pummeled him.
Yeah.
Real fights. But, yeah.
Not the little crown jewel 15-second match.
Well, that also speaks a lot to Brock, is the guy who actually beat the crap out of him. Brock is like, yeah, let's run an angle, and I'll act like I'm scared to death of him. And I think that tells me a lot about how Brock operates. I mean, somebody posted, I think it was, all of the pictures of Brock's of his big time matches right before he walked out of Gorilla, and it was him fist bumping with his opponent every single time, and then it was him and Moxley, and they were standing like 20 feet apart, and that was the only one that played that, where Brock is like, yeah, I guess we got to do this. But every other time, whether it was Undertaker or Roman or Seth or whoever, there was that image right before somebody's music hit of like, all right, dude, let's go tear the place. Like even Cena, when he beat up when he did 23 suplexes to Cena or whatever it was, even then, it was like, yeah, man, let's go make this look like $1 million. And there was only one instance where he didn't do that. I mean, real quick, because I have to mention this. It was in my head once you mentioned that Ambrose didn't have a plan. And I agree with you. You can't just walk into that and expect him to change how he is. He was so unplanned in his wrestling. That's how JBL commentated him. JBL would say, yeah, he has a plan, or he just goes in and does stuff. Like, he would say that.
Yeah.
Like, he would commentate him how he actually was. Everyone's like, yeah, no, John doesn't think of anything. John just kind of, there's a couple moves he knows he has to do and end on a dirty deed. That's about all he's got. Other than that, it could be anything.
Yeah, and that's why it doesn't work with Brock, because Brock's like, okay, all I need to do is a couple German suplexes in the F5. Oh. So it's like, where's the middle ground for both guys?
That's very true. That's a
good
point.
And it's like, dude, oh God, I lost my, it's like, you know, when you have that about a guy like John, for example, it's like, okay, I have to do this and this, but I'm going to choose where I do them at. You know, like with Mox, it's like, okay, I know I got to end this match on a dirty deeds, but as far as anything else that I got to do, you know, I'm going to do it here, or maybe I'll do it here, or maybe I'll do it 5 minutes in. And, you know, with Brock, it's like, okay, you need to do this at the 5 minute mark, this at the 10, and then, well, I'm going to start unleashing Germans and we're going to end with an F5. It's like, with that, I can understand where the contrast in style is there, but it's like, dude, Mox is Mox. You're not going to get a plan. Because, like every time I hear it when JBL would, like, no, he doesn't have a plan. He just goes in and every time I would hear that, I would think of that scene in The Dark Knight when Joker's like, do I look like a guy with a plan? It's like, that's Mox. That's Mox right there. It's like, no, I don't have a plan. I'm just going to do this. And well, I got to end it with this. All right, I'll end it with the dirty deeds.
Yeah, I think Mox like rubs a lot of old school guys like the wrong way. We saw how his podcast with Austin went, another very old school guy. So,
oh yeah, it doesn't get much more old school than that.
And awkward. That whole interview was really
yeah,
awkward.
It really was. It was probably like the only time like I listened to that interview. I was like, probably the only time I've ever heard anything with Austin that I was like, yeah, I don't know if I can actually finish this whole thing.
Yeah, so well, that turned south once he started asking him about how he grew up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when Mox was like, ah, so we're talking about this, huh? And it was just kind of, after that, it was just all downhill. You could tell he was not very comfortable.
I don't know if that was, you know, not good research on Austin's part or they didn't discuss it before, but it's like one of the questions, Mox has been very clear in whatever, he's down to do an hour, 2 hour podcast or interview or whatever, but don't ask him about like, his upcoming, like how he came up, like he does not talk about that. And I don't know if Austin didn't know that or if he didn't research it or if they didn't talk about it, because it's like after that, yeah, it's like, dude, I'm gonna go ahead and listen to like one of the older episodes now.
Yeah, let's throw the Vince McMahon one back on though.
Yeah, that was a good one. Yeah, that was a good one,
drilling him about Punk and stuff. I'm like, what do you guys think, since we're talking Lesnar's character, was he the right person to end a streak? I know that's a controversial topic. A lot of people didn't want it to end, but if there was someone to end it, was Brock Lesnar the right guy to end the streak?
I think after all these years, you know, as pissed as we were about it live and there, and everybody was, and a lot of people still are, like you mentioned, it's a very controversial thing. I honestly think, looking back at it, I would... And I know this answer is going to shock a lot of people, especially you, Dustin. I would say yes, honestly. I actually think he was.
Wow. What about you, Kuda?
I agree, but it's not necessarily because he was the right... This is going to sound odd, but it's not really because he was... It's because he was the one who said yes to it. Apparently, I've heard that Taker wanted Triple H to end it, and Triple H was like, nope, I'm not doing that to you. And then he asked Michaels to end it. Michaels said, nope, I'm not doing that to you. And then he asked Lesnar, and Lesnar was like, yeah, all right, I'll end the streak. Because, again, like we talked about, I just don't think Brock really cares.
That's a misconception on that, though, because from what Taker was saying, or what Lesnar Brock... actually didn't want to end it.
No, Lesnar was...
He was crying in gorilla position trying to get... Like, and this is legit account.
He
was begging Vince not to end it.
Yeah, he Taker's was like... He was about damn near on his hands and knees to Vince, begging him not to do it. Because Vince had decided that he wanted it ended that night, and Lesnar was obviously the guy in the match, and he's like, no, Lesnar, you're going to do it. And Lesnar was like, damn near crying and begging not to do it.
Then I apologize for being so incredibly ill-informed. I had no idea.
No, it's weird because they actually set that up in a UFC fight, believe it or not. Taker was at, I think it was Brock's last fight actually before, against Overeem, where that sent him into retirement very quickly. Undertaker's like, you want to go? And that was pretty much verbiage of, you want to end the streak. And Brock must have said yes. I mean, obviously he was emotional about doing it, because when you're there in a grill position about to do it, it's a lot different than agreeing to it.
Yeah, because like when you're, you know, you can sit there however long prior that was before it happened, and it's like, yeah, I'll do it, sure, no problem. And then it's like, but there when you're there in front of 80,000 people and you're realizing like what you have to go do, what you're about to go do, you know, you're about to do something that is not going to be, widely popular.
Oh, no,
at
I...
least.
I totally get it. Again, being as misinformed as I was, if I were in Brock's shoes at that moment, I'd probably be like, Vinny, can I borrow you for a second? Look, I know we signed it, but yeah. No, man. I don't like this 20-21-1 thing. No.
Because I guess Vince got the idea, because honestly, like, it came out a while after that Vince had been trying to get it ended ever since Randy Orton at WrestleMania 21.
Oh, wow.
And he asked, you know, but everybody up until Lesnar, everybody, of course, said no. It's like, no, I'm not going to do that. No, no way. You know, and then I guess he just decided, I'm tired of people telling me no, damn it. You're going to do it. And that's that.
And boy, did they get the reaction they wanted. They got that shocked reaction they wanted.
I'll say,
Once again, it was life for that. That's a whole different discussion because we're wanting to live stream watching WrestleMania 30 back. But they got the reaction they wanted. And I think, I don't think the streak needed to end, but I hate to say this. I agree with you guys. I think, unfortunately, Brock had to be the one that did it because of his aura.
Yeah.
How they built him.
Yeah, it's like with that guy of, you know, I mean, now, I think if, you know, let's say Michaels had done it or Hunter had done it or even Punk had done it, you know, I don't know if the reaction would have been the same because of Brock's status and stature and ways, but it's like, but that's just it with his persona, with how he is, with how he's built, how he's booked and things. Honestly, if you look at it in hindsight, there wasn't anybody that was more right for the position. If you think about it.
Yeah. I think there's an argument there. Yeah.
Yeah, I hate to say that. Unfortunately,
and trust me, that pains me. That I got chest pains right now saying this stuff. But it's like, damn it, I kind of have to, you know, say this.
I know we're going from storylines, but I just have so many questions of you guys with characters. What about John Cena? What did you think about Super Cena's character?
As far as the more recent the Super Cena idea, I mean, nobody sold it like he did, but, you know, again, to sound like a parrot, again, it was a guy that, you know, really wasn't all that cranked up as a character. Maybe a little bit more than some of the regular guys in tights, a little bit. But
in shorts, man, come on.
Yeah. Oh, no, I know, I hear you, but he did very well with it. I was always a fan of his. I mean, to own the John Cena sucks chants to his theme song that well were pretty good. I forget who it was, but he was in the ring doing a promo with somebody at some point, and they said, "Well, John, maybe these people will be happier if you just went away." And the whole place cheered, and Cena just went, "I'm a man of the people. I'll see myself out," and started walking towards the ramp. Like, all right, I'm out of here. And I think, because he is that guy that if the whole crowd said, "We don't want to see you anymore," he would walk away. He actually is that guy. And I think it helped him. I think it's very, because, I mean, he's so genuine. He used his actual name, you know, I mean, he signed away the rights to his actual name, to Vince McMahon. It's not a stage name. So I think Super Cena was great. I think Thugonomics Cena was great. I even liked Ruthless Aggression Cena because that was one of the most shocker moments when he debuted. It's just this random kid with the little Tyson Kidd haircut in trunks just slapped Angle's face off. And nobody had any idea who he was. And it just, and then I think not too long afterwards, he's teaming with The Undertaker and things like that. So he, I mean, you talk about putting the rocket ship on somebody, but he's the Super Cena angle for him. I liked it. All of his feuds, I think, were very well done, even though I think he got backed into a few corners where his opponent didn't quite match up. But he always did his best with everything. I'll give him that. And I think he sold a lot, and now he's kind of doing what Dwayne's doing. He's doing movies. He's the big star. He's on The Tonight Show. And,
Dwayne 2.0.
Yes. To some degree, yes.
What do you feel about John Cena?
Well, I mean, I'm convinced the guy has a shrine of Dwayne in his closet, like Helga did from Hey Arnold. Because Rock comes back and, you know, they do that whole angle. It's like, you know, I hate you for doing this. And, you know, you said all these things about me. But wait, let's fast forward a couple years. Holy crap, I'm you. I woke up in like that movie Face Off. We woke up in the same life, bro. What the hell? But no, it's like his character and his persona, I think what made, like, even when you take the little Tyson Kidd wannabe haircut with the pink trunks that he crapped himself, by the way, in, I had to throw that one out there. Sorry, John, love you. But everything, he had that ability to do literally anything that was given to him, all of his feuds and everything. And then with the Thuganomics scene, it's like the guy really does rap, you know? So it wasn't like they gave him something that he didn't know how to do and he had to go out there and try it. It's like, no, the guy really does rap and the guy can freestyle like a beast. And, you know, so that worked. And then the whole Super Cena thing, it's like, okay, some of the feuds and matches were, like Kuda said, you know, you got backed into a corner a little bit. But I always thought, like, his feuds where he got to showcase, like, his passion and his, like, that was John. That's John as a whole. And I think a lot of what made him so great was, you know, a lot of what you see, most of what you see is actually John. It's not a character. It's not a persona. It's him. And I think that's what an outside of the ring, when you get outside of it, it's like he was that guy that was, you know, I want to have a friend like that. I want to have a brother like that. You know, he was that guy that you could relate to so well in his whole coming up of, like, you know, I'm not going to give up because I want this and I'm going to get this because this is what I want. And I'm not going to give up until I get there. And even when I get there, I'm still not going to stop.
Yeah, I think that's the thing is John did what he could. You know, he was the guy that ushered into PG era, and I think unfortunately he got a lot of flack for that.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of people weren't happy about the whole Aaron move. But, you know, Kuda's, you know, knocking the point, and I keep agreeing with it, is, you know, you can have characters in wrestling, but I think, you know, it's the wrestlers that are in it. You know, it's not the character that makes people successful. It's the people performing the character that I think is the big thing. Because I don't think John was a character.
No.
I actually think everything he did was John Cena himself. Right. And I know, and that's why people start saying Cena sucks, because people thought he was just playing a character and was fake.
Yeah, it's like, you know, then it's like you made a really good point there. It's like, what makes it's not what makes the character so great, it's who's doing it. Like, could you see, like, the Big Show being the Undertaker? You know, could you see somebody tall, or, like, could you, like, for example, here's a good one. Could you see, like, Psycho Sid or Kevin Nash being the Undertaker? Like, oh, that character? No. There's no way. And yeah. You know, when you have something like, when you have that ability and that talent and you find that character and you fully understand, but with John, it's different because, like we talked about, I don't think most of it wasn't really a character, it was him. But then when you have a character persona like Undertaker or something, when you have somebody who, you know, like Mark, he takes that character and he embodies it, he becomes it, and that's what made it so good, because he was the man for it.
Yeah. It's crazy. I think that John, you know, like Kuda said, I think he loves the people. I think he'd walk away when the people are kind of done with him.
Yeah.
I mean, he technically has, kind of. I mean, yeah, he doesn't really show up anymore.
No, he pretty much, like, that night when, he, you know, I walk away, it's like, well, I'm kind of doing that. Hasn't been there in what? Literally, when's the last time he was there?
Raw reunion.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
And then WrestleMania 35 as Fug John.
Oh, yeah, 35, yeah.
But before that, he hardly appeared at all.
Right.
So I want to close on, I think, the biggest character of all time, and that's The Undertaker. So let's, on our closing thoughts, like, what do you guys think about The Undertaker, the character, you know, the mystique? Because I think he's, like, one of the true actual characters.
Yeah.
Because obviously Mark Calaway's not a dead man.
He looks like it, but he's not.
So, sorry, Kuda, what do you think about The Undertaker, Kuda?
Well, I mean, this is why, you know, because when I do my sports show on Fridays, we always talk about the Mount Rushmore of certain sports. And this is why in wrestling, I think there are two Mount Rushmores. I think there is your overall Mount Rushmore, and then there's your character Mount Rushmore. And The Undertaker is on the character Mount Rushmore, hands down, because what always tells me as a great character type wrestler is, if you never won a championship, would you have been a colossal success? And the answer to that with The Undertaker is absolutely yes. If he never won a title and did everything he did, he would still be just as big of a deal, just as popular, just as renowned. And I think that's the key to being a full-on character-type wrestler. Like, even now, with The Fiend. If he never won a title, I really don't think anybody would care. It's not, I just think it's modern fans that consider a title validation. And I don't necessarily know if it's for real validation with certain characters. So as far as The Undertaker goes, probably the best character wrestler of all time. I mean, every time you hear the gong, I get goosebumps to this day.
Oh, yeah.
I believe it was Extreme Rules earlier this year. I went to Philly with my non-wrestling fan girlfriend, and I actually had her feel the... I felt like Mick Foley, because I had her feel the goosebumps on my arm while he was coming out. And she was amazed that I was that immersed in it. But I'm like, no, this guy actually does make you think, like, you're watching some, you know, transient being from another world walking down an entrance ramp right now. Like, he can actually get you to that point. So, you know, that's why I label myself as a self-admitted smark. I will suspend my reality for him. So, yeah, I think he's one of the best, or I'm sorry, he is the best character and still one of the best overall. Absolutely.
You mentioned a Mount Rushmore for characters. Who's on your Mount Rushmore for that?
Well, for characters, I would say it's Undertaker. I would say it's the Ultimate Warrior, because he was a whole lot more character. I would, believe it or not, I would say the Honky Tonk Man.
Really?
The greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time. and then I'd probably finish with probably one of the better gimmick-style wrestlers, which is Sergeant Slaughter, is probably who I'd be last on. Because he was always a character-type guy. So, yeah. Now, he was in the era when everybody was pretty much a character, which is why I think it's so cool how Hogan was the one who stepped out, because he really was the one that wasn't a character. Maybe you could put the Iron Sheik up there as well, as opposed to Slaughter. But, yeah, as far as character guys, yeah, but Taker's number one. He's the biggest head on that particular mountain.
Who's your Mount Rushmore wrestling in general? Now I'm kind of interested.
In general, it is it's Ric Flair, Rock, Austin, and Hogan. However, Hogan is very close to being knocked off and replaced with John Cena, in my personal opinion.
That's mine. I'll say I would replace Rick with John, only because of star value outside. It's hard.
Yeah, because
it's like a combination between those guys and even Undertaker. It's like, how do you pick?
Yeah.
No, I agree. Yeah.
All right, Shife, so what do you think about the Undertaker's gimmick and character?
Well, I mean, I agree wholeheartedly on the true best character of all time. I don't think anybody will ever top how good the Undertaker is at his character. And, you know, in an era when kayfabe was, you know, after the curtain call and things, when kayfabe kind of started to, you know, fall a little bit, this guy was doing everything in his wholehearted power to make you believe that, you know, I really am this being from Death Valley, you know, the Grim Reaper type thing. I mean, he's going on talk shows dressed in, when he had to do appearances, he was dressed, you know, he was in character. It was that, you know, you actually, wait a minute, wow, is this guy really, you know, it actually made you think, you know, in the back of your mind it wasn't, but it was like, wow, this guy might actually be legit. It's like, wait a minute, this is weird. And then, even to this day, when he can still come out and you still get that, for someone, the arena's in the purple and, you know, black color, and it's like you got that aura and that mystique about him. When you can still get engrossed with that, you can suspend all, you know, I know this is a dude playing a, you know, when you can suspend all of that to this day being grown men like we are nowadays, and it's like, wow, when you can do that and you have that ability and star power and character power, you know, nothing will ever, I don't think anybody will ever come close to that ever again.
I echo the same sentiment as Kuda. You know, every time I see Undertaker's entrance live, the goosebumps are there. No matter how many times I've seen it, it's like your hair crawls just a tad bit with the gong and the, you know, smoke pyro and then the, you know, the dang heat flames that make it extremely hot in the building. And just everything about that aura of the Undertaker, it's just like, he played that role so well. You almost thought he was like this, like cult, like satanic leader. Like, you thought that that was actually him.
Well, and it like echoes back to actually back when, remember when he was doing pretty much the cult leader ministry type thing?
Yeah.
Like, they actually had to, Vince and them actually had to have a talk with him and be like, dude, you're playing a character. This isn't real. Like, you're acting like he was actually so engrossed in it that he was trying to become it for real. And it was like, they're like, dude, you need to like lighten up back here. This, you know, back here, you're a guy, not, you're not the cult leader. You're not trying to crucify people and you're not like, you're not this. And it's like that. I think that's the things like that are what made it and what still make it so, so great is how much he loves and does and plays it so perfectly.
And our very, very old school guy of kayfabe. You won't be seeing Undertaker posts shirtless selfies on Instagram while trying to be his character. That's in our lost. That's in our lost art of today's generation of wrestling.
Well, unless you're Matt Riddle, and that is his character. But yeah,
bro.
Well, Riddle's probably doing something else on the side that I'm surprised he hasn't failed a drug test for.
That's got to be in his agreement for his contract, honestly, at this point. Like, okay, you can, you know, I'm going to sign for WWE. I'm going to sign for NXT. But, guys, you know, like, I smoke weed, right? It's like, when you test me, when we do the random tests, I'm going to fail that part. But test me for everything else that's really illegal. So, yeah.
So, yeah, the Dead Man will forever be the best gimmick, I think, in professional wrestling history because of how well he played it. You know, and it was creepy. You know, as a kid, The Undertaker scared me.
It's like him and Kane, especially like when he aligned with Kane. That's gotta be Kane! That was probably the greatest commentary line of all time, by the way.
Kane's another guy that also could be on that gimmick Rushmore. But,
that's the truth. Also, just outside of Kane, period, just Glenn Jacobs and his willingness. He would do absolutely anything that they needed him to do. What? I mean, seeing the YouTube videos of him in the full Kane gear doing rap videos with Daniel Bryan on Team Hell No. I mean, if that's not willing to do anything, I don't know what is. So,
yeah, Kane, that's just another topic of how good Glenn Jacobs is as a company man, doing whatever came for the company first before himself.
I think another honorable mention before we finish up on, I think Goldust actually would be another one on the gimmick list. I mean, the guy was actually willing to get breast implants at one point for the gimmick, and thank God Vince said no. God he said no for that. But, I mean, another one, though, as far as gimmick character goes, I think that's another honorable mention. Not for the Mount Rushmore or anything, just another honorable mention of great gimmicks.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, that and the small tip of the cap to Savio Vega, because they were running the character and it really wasn't doing anything for anybody. And then Vega was the one who told them, hey, during the match, just start, like, rubbing and feeling me up the whole time. And that's what got people to go, man, this guy's... He doesn't just look like a freak. He is a freak. Like that's kind of what got the whole thing started. So thankfully, Savio gave him an idea, and it worked.
And Mick Foley was the other one we forgot for honorable mentions. Oh, Mankind was a
well, and the ability to pull off the three faces of Foley. I think that's another great mention. And I mean, because you had Mankind, you had Cactus Jack, and then completely out in left field, you had Dude Love. I mean, I think that was another testament, to his greatness, because it's like you have Mankind, the crazy mask dude who's willing to do whatever, and then you have the hardcore badass of Cactus Jack, and then it's like, I want to add another character to this, but I want it to be something completely different and out in left field, and it's like, okay, I'm gonna be a loving hippie called Dude Love. I mean, and then when you can enter that in the Royal Rumble and actually have all three of your faces in one Rumble match and have it be unique every time, yeah, that just another testament to Foley's greatness.
Yeah. All right.
Now, also, the only guy to ever change gimmicks in plain sight.
Yep.
When right before Triple H and him had their street fight at Royal Rumble 2000, and he takes off the Mankind gimmick to reveal Cactus Jack. I mean, that's just another level to be able to change gimmicks
right
mid-promo. That's just crazy.
And then for people to not only to be able to change on the spot like that, but for people to be able to go, okay, I'm gonna buy into this right then and there. It's not like, oh, you know, I'm gonna change and see if this catches on. No, it's like I'm gonna flip change right here, boom, Cactus Jack, and everybody's just like, hell yeah, let's do it.
Yep, I agree.
I say there's no one quite like Mick Foley. That is for sure. Guy's a interesting guy. But all right, I think that's gonna wrap up the discussion part. Before we head out, Kuda, you want to plug yourself one more time? You know, social media and all that.
Yeah, you can listen to me every Monday night on CBS Sports Radio 1300 AM. Look for a link on my Twitter, which is Kuda_Junior. That's KUTA_JR. I'm going to be on 15 minutes early this week because a basketball game moved me. So at 5:45 this particular Monday, and I get to make the official announcement on your guys' show, is I will once again be having Bailey Superfan Izzy, the NXT Superfan, on my show again.
Oh,
so
nice.
That's going to be fun. That's going to be fun to have Izzy on again. And other than that, it'll just be me ranting about what I experienced at Full Gear, and hopefully I won't have to tell any crazy stories about what happens after Full Gear when I go out with a couple of my compatriots from Turnbuckle Topics. But, yep, every Monday at 6 p.m. normally on CBS Sports Radio, 1300 a.m. Follow me on Twitter at Kuta_Junior. That's KUTA_JR.
Are you still promoting people to shave their balls with Manscaped?
My entire network is, yes. The thing is, I read the ads because I have network rules. I can't say that, so I have to find a creative way to say it.
Pretty much promote it without saying it. That's funny. Nice. All right, Kuda. Thanks, man, for joining us. And on that note, stay golden, my friends.
Doses.